This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, I am about to wish you Happy New Year, but that might be a little bit premature since this is just released a couple of days before the actual New Year begins. But nevertheless, I shall wish you a Happy New Year anyhow and come back and give it to you again next week when you return for another episode of the Magic Word Podcast. I thank all of you coming back week after week and listening to these podcasts. It really cheers my heart to know that you enjoy this podcast and has allowed us to have over 650 episodes and continuing to grow into the future. This is exciting. Well, this past year of 2021 certainly has had its ups and downs, its highs and lows, its starts and stops, where we thought we were going to do something that we didn't, and then we're not too sure, and different things that happened. I was out attending as many conventions as I could, and you got the benefit of that by getting to hear the daily reports that I was giving from these conventions that I attended, and they were just a lot of fun. I'm looking forward, hopefully, to a lot more that will be coming up here in 2022 that I've already registered for. I have heard already that one convention, that is the Obie's 4F convention, the Fector's Finger Flicking Frolic, which is an invitation-only close-up convention in Batavia, New York, just outside of Buffalo. We were just notified that the convention that was supposed to be live this year at the end of April has been postponed yet again for now the third time, and so they're looking, hopefully, to have that in 2023. Since we're not going to be having it here in 2022. So it's possible some other conventions might be postponed as well or canceled or something, but there are several others that are still on the boards to take place, like the SAM convention in Las Vegas, then of course the Magi Fest, which was held this last fall, and they're going to get back on their regular rotation, so that's going to be coming up early this year then as well. Anyhow, a lot of stuff that's happening. And in that regard, let me implore you to please notify me of when your convention is going to be held. We have a convention calendar on the Magic Word Podcast website, and it is utilized every day by people all around the world. And so it is being accessed by people who are interested in finding out when a convention is going to be held, where it is, the website, et cetera. I need to know that information, and I try to go out and find it myself, but it would be so much more helpful if you are an organizer or if you're involved on the board of one of the conventions coming up. Please notify me and let me know, or if you are attending a convention that you're aware of that's not on that calendar, I'd be glad to post it regardless of wherever it is in the whole world. Just let me know. Send an email to me. That is scott@themagicwordpodcast.com, and I'd be glad to put your information on the calendar. It's a free listing. I just need to know when it is and the website where people can go. So please notify me and we'll put that there. And also, if you will check next week, I'm going to post my annual Valhalla, that is the Hall of Magicians who have passed during this past year. I'm not going to post that yet because we still have another day or two to go, and hopefully we won't have any more, but who knows? It seems like the last few years we've had people right up to the last minute who have passed, and so it has again been a year of ups and downs and some sad losses of many people, and I think you might be surprised to remember some of the names of those who have passed. I know I was when I was looking back at this, and it's like, wow, it's hard to believe that they have gone, and I'd forgotten that it had happened earlier in the year, like Mark Wilson, you know, and others, for an example, that happened in early 2021. Well, anyhow, let's move on here for this week's episode, because we've got another young lady who is going to be our guest, someone I'm excited to introduce to you. If you have not had the opportunity to meet her, I must say this was my first opportunity to chat with her, and I wanted to because she reached an important milestone. I am a member of the Inner Magic Circle with Gold Star in London, England, and the Magic Circle is open to anybody who wants to become a member, and it's had a 116-year history, having first been founded back by David Devant, being its first president back in 1905. And so there have been some incredible magicians who have been members, those who have been presidents in the past then as well. And after 116 years this past year, they elected for the first time the first woman who has is now the president of the Magic Circle, and that's Megan Swan. And she is a young lady. In fact, she was has never known the Magic Circle not to accept women members. But of course, in its earlier days, the Magic Circle wasn't open to women. And back in the 1990s, I believe it was, they actually did open up for membership for women, and they have continued to progress to the point where now they have not only a president, but I believe their secretary is a woman then as well. So this week, please welcome Madam President, finally, Megan Swan, here on The Magic Word. Today I have with me someone who is a very special guest from over in London, England, and she is someone who most of you should get to know. If you haven't, then you will after this is over. She'll get to have a good friend here in someone who is, again, from England. She is a graduate of the University of Kent. Perhaps you know her because of her abilities as a magician, in which she's always working with trying to improve the environment and uses magic as the medium, if you will, to try to deliver her message, and that is, of course, of conservation and climate change and everything else like that. And we'll talk a little bit about that. And oh, by the way, also, she happens to be the first female president of the Magic Circle in their 116-year history. So please welcome my guest today, Ms. Megan Swan. Hey, Megan, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So glad that you could join us here today. So at the University of Kent, when you were going to school, was it in environmental science, or exactly what was the what exactly was your major there?
So I studied wildlife conservation, which is similar to environmental science. Quite a social science view on the world and mm-hmm. how you need to work with people and communities. And it's all about how behavior is important for saving the planet, in a nutshell, anyway.
And that's been something that has been a passion of yours. I mean, you've been doing magic, as I understand, since you were like 5 years old, mm-hmm. which has been like for the last 20 plus years. I mean, so you've really kind of done that most of you. So you wasted the first 5 years of your life, I guess, as they would say.
Yes. So I've done magic ever since I was 5 years old. I've always had a love for nature as well. My parents are very nature focused, always taking me out to parks and farms and places like that. So it's probably a lifelong passion. I don't know when it became conservation exactly, but I've always loved both magic and the environment.
And when so I guess did your parents take you out like camping and everything? Is that kind of when you kind of got with that, or you just
we never went camping? That wasn't quite our cup of tea, but we would go to various outdoor places, the local woods. I was always going to the woods and local parks, and mm-hmm. We have a family holiday to a farm every year, so I would learn about the environment there. So in the middle of the countryside on the moors in Devon, which is really, it's a really lovely part of England to go to.
Is that up by Wales, or where is that exactly?
It's in the bit below Wales. It's in the West Country.
Okay.
It's not quite as far for me to get to as Cornwall would
Cornwall.
Be. So Cornwall's
okay.
Right at the bottom, and Devon's a little bit further in, but West Country.
Obviously east of Bristol, but kind of south of that, and Bath.
Yes, it's south. It's southwest. Yes, it's slightly further south than Bristol and Bath.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay. Have you gotten, I assume, over to Bristol's Day of Magic from time to time?
I've been to it once. Mm-hmm. I don't go there all that often, but I have been to Bristol Day of Magic. I performed at Bristol Day of Magic, and it's a really lovely convention. It was a great day.
When you were performing, did you do your conservation routine and your, what do you call your routine actually?
So that, I call that my environmental magic.
Environmental,
I mainly perform that in schools, and that's mm-hmm. something I've been doing a little bit more recently. For Bristol Day of Magic, I actually did something I've been doing for even longer, and that was my ballet act. So I have a 10-minute stage act, which is themed on another love of mine, which is to dance. And I perform, I have a table that's backstage in the ballet, and props that you generally find in the dressing room, and some magical things happen. Maybe you wouldn't normally see it in the dressing room, but it's all themed at backstage in the ballet, and I dance as well, so I do the whole thing on point, just in my tutu. It's all to ballet music. It's good fun. I've entered it into competitions. I've won a few awards with it, and it's something I've been working on for years. It's a good piece of performance. It's good fun.
Well, that is inspiring, I think, where you're actually going to be using something that is from your life that you enjoy and you can call on, because it is you as opposed to I don't know, doing doves or something else, or if you're just tearing a newspaper, putting it back together just for the magical effect, to actually tie something into that, or like you do with the Professor's Nightmare, whatever the kind of presentation you would have, it's something that you actually, it means something to you.
Yes. Yeah, all of my magic is themed on things that I love to do. The ballet act was the first one. And it, to begin with, it was just, I was just doing ballet and magic. But over the years, I've themed it more. In fact, I was lucky enough to get a scholarship from the Magic Circle to go to Jeff McBride's Magic and Mystery School in Las Vegas. And it was him that first suggested this idea of the dressing table and setting it backstage. And everything from there, it just sort of fitted into place over the time. I've made it more and more ballet themed. And that really brought the act on. It made a huge difference.
It sounds like Romani also, where she had gone over and worked with Jeff and also had kind of worked with a themed act and everything like that, of something with her outfit and everything that she has. So
yes, yeah. I do love a theme. It's just I needed to bring it out more, I think, in the act that I was doing.
So obviously ballet has been something that's been a passion of yours. Dance in general, or particularly ballet, or is it a jazz dance, another kind of dance in general, or...?
I do enjoy dancing. I only ever did ballet properly. Never professionally. It was just a hobby. It's something I did like once a week with my friend. But yeah, I enjoy dancing in clubs and places. Not so much at the moment, but
yeah,
I enjoy having a dance. I'll be up on the dance floor at the weddings and things like that.
Well, that was what I was thinking about ballet. When you say you just like once a week or something, again, thinking about Romani, where she loves to do salsa dancing. And so she would find salsa clubs in which she was finding that also not only as a form of something that she enjoyed, but also a form of exercise. So she was looking at that as a way of losing weight and everything, you know, then too. So it was something that she had enjoyed. So ballet is not something I think it is normally just take some of your friends out and say, hey, let's go do ballet. So that's not... I assume you have a place where you go.
Not so much now. When I was younger, I did do proper lessons and went to a class once a week. It was never quite a professional level, but I did the grades. I went through the different steps and learned it all properly from a ballet teacher. And I mentioned a friend. I had a friend who did ballet as well. Ever since we went through all the classes since we were about five as well, did them for many years. In more recent years, I've just had to keep up with the ballet myself and try and do as much as I can to keep fit. Sometimes I'm not so good at keeping up with it.
Well, are there different levels? Kind of like, go ahead. What?
I just try and stay fit generally, just so I can actually dance. That's a little bit of dedication.
But you haven't been in competition with ballet as you have with magic, obviously, I guess.
Oh no, I would never win a ballet competition.
Okay.
I do enough ballet for the magic act, but I would never be a prima. I couldn't go with that at all.
Are there different levels that you would go through in ballet? I'm very curious about this. I mean, much like, let's say, karate or jitsu, where you have different colored belts and you work up to a black belt or something like that. Within ballet, you have to go through different levels?
Yeah, there are different levels. So I went through grades. I got up to grade 6, I think. Yes, grade 6. You can go higher than that, and if you're doing it professionally, I think I never even really looked into it because it was never going to be a thing. But there are grades, there are ways of training, and the those who are really really want to do it as a career will go to a ballet school and actually sort of, it becomes part of their studies as well.
Right.
So that's you can get seriously into it. I'm really not an expert in ballet. Yeah, something that I love to do, and I put it into my act when I was about 14 and never stopped.
Right. Well, I would think that would be very important. Actually, my brother had taken ballet, or my mom had put him into a ballet classes, and I almost wish she would have done that for me. The reason was it allowed him to have better coordination. As a result, he was a really good American football player, to the point where he could have been professional, and he was drafted and everything. Long story, but anyhow, he always attributed the fact that he did have good coordination on the field due to ballet classes he had taken. Obviously, ballet does have some relation, I would think, to magic and to theater, so this way that you move properly across the stage. When you say you incorporate that, do you think of that consciously as you're performing?
Yes, so the reason I did add the ballet in the first place was that I would use the stage, and Well, actually, so I could work to music because I didn't want to talk. I was too nervous at that age when I first started.
Sure.
So I incorporated the ballet, and everything, all of the tricks I use are ones that I've chosen so that I can move around the stage with, or I've adapted the routines to make it so I don't have to go back to my table too often. I obviously do to go and change my props, the pick up a trick or put it down, but I try and limit that. And when I'm actually performing the trick, I try to be out front and performing it. Like the Lincoln Rings, for example, I do a routine, but once I've got them in my hands, I do the full routine, dancing across the stage, and then only go back once I've finished it.
What were some of the tips that Jeff McBride had helped you with to make your back improve?
So it was the main thing I remember was very much about the story elements, and just so building the table was a big part of that, and thinking about the music that I use, and really thinking about how I can build the character of the ballerina rather than it was a little bit disjointed at the time, my act. As I said, it was just sort of, I was just sort of doing the ballet as well as doing the magic. Mm-hmm. Although I'd thought about tricks that I could dance around with, there was no connection to the props. So since then, I've really worked on making everything fit the theme, make everything make sense. So it's not just, I'm not just picking up some silks for a random thing, that I will produce them from something that's ballet related. And I've got flowers, which are already in there, and champagne. They made sense. And I've made more use of the mirror, and I've got a floating ball that comes off the mirror now, rather than just out of a box.
right. That's different. That's clever. Yeah, because it's a silver mirror, and you have a silver ball that comes out of the mirror, kind of a thing.
So it's if you think of a dressing table, has got all different lights around the mirror.
Yes.
So I've got very big lights around my mirror. Okay. And so one of those comes off, and I float that.
I see.
It looks like it's a light bulb that's floating.
Right. And so, again, your act is very much like you're in the dressing room, and they're kind of seeing the magic that's happening as you're preparing for the show or something.
Yes. And my Lincoln Rings, the first one, comes off of a mirror, so I have like a handheld mirror as well. I'm looking in, and it falls off. I'm like, oh, where did that come from? So lots of little bits like that to try and make it all make sense.
Kind of like Cardini act, in which he was, well, of course, he was an aristocrat, in which he was having cards pop in his hand. He was drunk at the time or whatever, but at the end of the evening, but he kind of had a themed kind of a thing. So it sounds like different things are happening in the dressing room before you go on, you know, which is what I like about Tina Leonard's act, where she's the mop lady, you know, the janitor, and then the mop comes alive and everything. So those kinds of vignettes, I think, really ring well with the audience.
Yes, definitely. I love Tina's act, and I think that's a good example of something that's inspired me. It's really good to learn from magicians who have really thought about the character and the reasoning behind what they do. I think I'm not quite there yet, but it's the act's getting there. It's taking a lot of work.
Well, you're still thinking, and that's the problem, I think, with a lot of magicians is they stop thinking, myself included. I put myself in that group in which it's kind of, okay, think this project is finished. It's successful. I'm working with that, but there are still things you can do with that that should be improved.
Oh, no, this act will never be finished.
Okay.
In fact, I've changed, the act's gone through many, many different forms, and even during the lockdown, I've sort of stripped it apart, and I've changed the music, and I've updated more of the props, and come up with more ideas to make it make even more sense, because it still wasn't quite, I wasn't happy with it wasn't quite there, but it's moving closer, it's getting more in the direction that I wanted to be in now, so I'm looking forward to being able to perform it again.
Yeah, whenever you went to Jeff's, I would imagine that if you had all these different ideas and things, it's kind of like, okay, well, we need to decide who are you, what do you want to do, what is your character, and then kind of build from there, because you have these different skills of magic and dance and creativity and whatnot, but need to kind of put this together. Was that kind of one of the main things he kind of tried to keep you focused on something?
Yes, it was very much about bringing it together and making the character fit with the ballet and the music I used as well. I remember I used to use sort of quite modern pop music, just the backing tracks. And I think that there was, I'm pretty sure they suggested that I use classical ballet music, which I was reluctant to do at first, but then once I did put it in, that they were right. It was right.
Right.
So I should have listened earlier.
Sometimes it's not a bad idea to listen to someone just a little bit older and a little bit more experienced.
I listened to many ideas. I quite liked working to pop music at the time, but I think as I grew up as well, I think that helped. The act's grown up with me, definitely.
Do you have people who work with you still as far as producing and directing your show, and or just friends who come from time to time who would say, hey, you might do this or that, and some trusted people?
So I've been working really closely with a lady called Nicola, who is a fantastic director. She's a former ballerina, and she's directed like the Mamma Mia movie, and she does Mamma Mia shows. She's an amazing choreographer. So she's been really helping me and Mitchell with the new music. She's helped me choose the music and really get the story working. So she's been a really good help in the last few months, especially.
And she has been working apparently with other magicians, or are you the first magician she's worked with?
She has. I think she worked with Romany. She's married to a magician called Kim as well, who's lovely and a member of the Magic Circle, which is where the connection comes from. So they're there. Yeah, shout out for them because they're both brilliant.
And when you are talking about having some of the effects in your show, then do you, when you're adding things and you have an idea, do you have someone go out and build them? Do you buy them and say, well, that's a good idea, I want to put that in my show? Or do you physically put them together yourself? I mean, I know Romany like sews her dresses and things, for an example. I mean, how far do you go?
I do try and make as many as I can myself. Mm-hmm. And my dear dad used to make a lot of my props for me as well. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he passed away a couple of years ago, but he was a massive help, especially in the early years when I was coming up with more and more ideas. I haven't changed too many of my props recently. But I do, if I need something made, I'll go out and find the right person for it. But I try and make it myself first if I can.
And have you thought about having a character? I mentioned that because I just recently was listening to a lecture by Lucy Darling or Carissa Hendricks talking about the character building of Lucy Darling. I assume you are yourself, you're Megan Swan as a magician, but have you thought or have you worked with maybe being, I don't know, a climate professor or something? I don't know.
No, I do generally perform as myself. I think I like the character to be me, and maybe it's an exaggerated version of myself.
Sure.
But I think that helps, especially if something does go wrong. It helps so I can react kind of more naturally.
Sure.
obviously working to not let anything go wrong. But the character from my Black Swan act, the ballet act, was inspired by the character of Black Swan from Swan Lake, which is one of my favourite ballets to watch. But then the more research I did into her, I realised that every performance she was a different character. It really depended on the ballerina herself. So I think that helped me to realise that this character should just be a slightly more confident, flamboyant, maybe slightly flirtatious version of myself. And she's developed over the years, and I think once I started putting more of myself into the character, I think the act improved then as well. And now I think it's going to be very much more me now than Black Swan, and she's a bit crazy, this version of me.
Okay. In what way? In what way? You mean she's a little bit crazy? What does she do?
It just does weird things with her props in the dressing room. Okay. That sounds dodgy, doesn't it? It just has strange ideas. Like, why would anyone pour water into a newspaper?
Yeah, okay, I see your point. Yeah, why would you do that? Right.
But she comes up with the ideas, so that's who I'm playing, a slightly wacky ballerina who likes to perform to people.
You mentioned the different character on Black Swan, for an example. I always think about, okay, they're particularly in a ballet, or more about ballet than a play, because they have to dance, they have to hit their marks and everything along the way. But did I hear you say a different ballerina would play the part of Black Swan different from another ballerina? They're both different, or they both would be the same? I think it'd be the same. Kind of interchangeable to me.
maybe it's not so much down to the ballerina, although I think the ballerina would make a difference. It's down to the version of the ballet that they're doing. So there's so many different versions of Swan Lake. In some versions, Odette dies. Sometimes she doesn't. True love saves the day. And you've got to have the dance of the dying swan, haven't you?
Yeah.
And in some versions, everyone dies, which is quite a deadly ending. And so with the character of the Black Swan, sometimes she's an evil enchantress. Sometimes she's an evil twin of the White Swan. Sometimes she's the daughter of Von Rosbert, the evil conjurer. She changes in different versions of it depending on who the director is and what storyline they're telling.
Sure,
so she's always similar, but there are different versions of her character. And so I realised I got to pick and choose which was quite nice.
Again, just with ballerinas, I think it would be a little bit different on stage when you're that far away as the audience and seeing someone's expressions that you can see on the big screen that you can't see that far away on stage, even if you're in the front row necessarily, because of the nuances of the glances aside or their head movement or whatever they might do in a movie or television or something, as opposed to being on stage on a ballet. That's why I'm thinking that ballerinas and other people who are ballet performers would be fairly interchangeable, as opposed to even if someone was in a movie reading the same script, they would have different nuances. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I guess so. I think ballet is very much down to the expression of the movement and the way people move. I think that there are differences with different ballerinas. But I guess the more you get into ballet, the more you're likely to notice that. The story and the moves could be the same, but the ballerina could do them slightly differently. And ballerinas have different strengths as well. That's probably the extent of my ballet knowledge.
Okay. That's okay. No. I've never talked with anyone that's such a. Except you have more knowledge than I do about this, and so that was interesting. I was really wanting to go down that road just a little bit. So about as far as the schools, do you go into what's the highest level of education? Do you go into high schools, or do you go into colleges, or mainly into elementary schools?
So my main show is aimed at primary schools, but I have started doing a few secondary schools. So primary is elementary, and then secondary is 11 to 16, that kind of age group. So I've been doing some of the younger year groups in secondary schools, but I have performed for adults as well. Mm-hmm. I've done not so much the full show. I normally do a reduced version for them at the moment, but it's the tricks. Most of them are quite adaptable to different audiences, which is nice. I just change the facts that I'm talking about, the tips that I give. Obviously, for young children, if you're talking about saving energy, it's switch off the lights and turn off the TV and things like that. Whereas for teenagers, I can start talking about fast fashion and how bad that is for the environment. Mm-hmm. So it's normally the same tricks, but with different words, different scripts.
Have you had audiences from, companies who have requested you to come in and talk to their employees about this?
I haven't done any of that yet. So the eco stuff is a little bit more recent for me. Mm-hmm. And half of the time I've been doing it has been the pandemic. So I focused mainly on children. And during the lockdown, I was performing very much mainly for young children in the Girl Guides. So lots of young girls trying to teach them about the environment, but also encourage them to get into magic.
Now, the Girl Guides are similar to what we have in the United States, I guess, is the Girl Scouts and Brownies. They're scouting
Brownies.
Organization. Brownies,
yes.
More?
Okay. Yeah. They do different activities and earn badges.
Right.
And, learn lots of life skills and have fun.
Of course. What about teaching them? Do you teach magic as well?
I don't tend to teach magic. I haven't taught any. Obviously, it's with the Girl Guides. I could have maybe done it as part of a badge or something, but yeah. I prefer performing, and it's easier to do over Zoom as well than to teach, I think. And I know I've not got into teaching yet. Maybe one day, but at the moment it's performances.
Do they offer magic as a badge for the Girl Guides?
So the badges are different depending on where they are, but in my region, they can now get I'm a magical person badge if they've seen me perform. So I got to design my own badge, which is quite nice.
Really? Wow, that's pretty cool. What does it look like?
Oh, I haven't got it around, have I? So I designed it to look like a magic wand that you'd sort of swished.
Okay.
So you've got I could probably send you a picture. You've got sort of like lines where a star where it's moved, and then it says I'm a magical person. And then there's certain things I had to put on, like the logo, they call it the trefoil for the Girl Guides, and Girl Guiding Laser, which is London and South East region. So there are certain things that had to go on there, so they're all in there, and then there's a few stars. It's quite bright and colourful, which I think the girls like.
But is it something they actually have to acquire or achieve, or is it just from watching your performance that they get something out of that and then they get the badge?
That one they can get from just having watched my performance.
Gotcha.
And inviting me along, but that's quite nice.
Yeah, didn't know if they have to answer questions.
No, I could have made it like that, but I decided just to give out the badge just for seeing me, just for watching the show.
Right. Well, long term, what are you wanting to do with that?
With your act.
No, not with the bat. No. Oh. As a side, I mean, just as far as with the act, as far as we're talking about growth with that and having it move on to the future. And it's always something being added or whatever. I mean, at your young age now, let's say you're twice your age in the future, where do you hope to have that act be, or where do you want to perform that, or how would you like to see that evolve?
The environmental act, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would just like to keep performing it. I'd like to keep doing it in schools and reach as many as I can, but I'd like to have lots of different routines that can form for different audiences. I'd like to work more with environmental charities to help get their messages out.
Hmm.
It'd be great to perform to the government and get them to listen.
Right.
places like COP26 is coming to Glasgow. It'd be great to perform at conventions like that. Just as much magic as I can do, really. And recently, I've been performing it live on TV, which has been amazing.
That's right, seen by millions.
But very scary.
Yes.
Yes.
You've been kind of thrust into that, so you really haven't been doing much TV until here of late, I'm assuming.
Correct. Yes, I hadn't done TV in years, and then even then, it was only a small amount. So it's it's definitely been a whirlwind few days for me.
With the, I know that Lisa Mena has a program that she takes overseas, and she is teaching and trying to teach some things to indigenous people in different countries where they have poor, I guess they got pollution problems and poor sanitation problems and things like that. So that she's trying to show a little bit of magic and get their interests as well. So is this something, again, that you think you could carry to other countries to maybe help some children learn to be more environmentally conscientious, so this way they're not going to be burning down their rainforests or something?
Potentially it could be. It'd be nice to focus on local gigs, because I guess that's more environmentally friendly in itself.
Yep.
But yeah, for the right reasons, I would travel. I wouldn't want to just fly out just because you know, it's not about the money for me, it's about the impact.
Mm-hmm.
But for the right reasons, I would travel with the show if I could. Well, a version of the show. I don't think I could get all the props on a plane at the moment.
Might be something that you could do as far as like with a TED Talk, in which you could put together something like that, you know, and pitch the TED people and maybe do something kind of like that. Just a thought.
Yeah, potentially. There's so much scope with it. I'm really enjoying it right now. So I'm focusing on the school shows, and I need to get back to that now. You know, now the restrictions are lifting here, we can I can think about doing that again. But I've been slightly distracted by becoming president of the Magic Circle.
You're the president of the Magic Circle. Oh, that's right. Let's get around to that. So, you have been.
Later.
That's been quite a journey. So you were a board member from before, an officer.
Yes. So I was the secretary of the Magic Circle for 5 years, which is an officer role. And then I was vice president for the past 2 years, and I became president this year.
And so you'd served, Noel Britton was the president, and then when he stepped down, did you step in the interim whenever he had left?
Yes, so there was a short period where I was, as vice president, I stepped up to act as president, but I've now got the job in my own right.
Right. Got fully elected with all the votes. That's right.
Yes.
So it was just really a short time, I think, when Noel had stepped down, so it was like less than 6 months, wasn't it, or so-ish?
Yeah, it was a few months ago. Yeah, just back in April, I think.
Right. And what is the other lady's name who's the vice president now?
Catherine Rhodes.
And she was doing what before?
She was the secretary before, so she's followed the same route as me.
Same
secretary,
route as you.
Vice president.
Okay.
Who knows what's next?
And within the Magic Circle, I know that it was 1991. I was talking with Daryl Rose, and he said he was the one who had kind of put that forth of saying we need to have this changed, so this way that we're not going to be just a male-dominated organization. And we did break out. So for the last 20 years, which has since you've been involved in magic, I say 20 years, 30 years. So actually, your whole life, basically, you've known nothing other than them being an accepting organization. You didn't know it before.
Correct.
When it was,
yeah. In fact, my birthday is almost a year to the day after that vote was taken.
Oh, really?
So my birthday is the vote was taken on the 9th of October 1991, and my birthday is the 8th of October 1992. So just revealed my date of birth, all to know. But so it was a significant date, and all my life I've been able to join the Magic Circle, which I think is a good thing. And lots of people will ask me, why didn't they let women join before or something like that? And it's like, you know what, I wasn't there. I don't know, but we've we fixed it, at least. Yes, it may have been a bit late, but we've moved on and things are a lot more positive. And
right.
We're moving in the right direction, which is what I like to focus on.
Right. There's no reason to talk about why was it the way that it was. It's better to talk about why is it or how is it going to change for the future.
Yes, exactly. It's when the Magic Circle was set up in 1905, it was completely normal to be a gentleman's club. Mm-hmm. So it was just a normal sport, what everyone did. And there are other clubs that were slow to allow women to join as well. But we've moved in the right direction and things are a lot more positive now.
Right. Yep. Very much so positive. And so that's one of the things I would think, too, going back to what you are doing within the schools. I would assume that you are really encouraging young ladies to get involved, whether it's going to be their passion, whether it might be in dance or whether it's going magic or outside being a park ranger or whatever it is. I assume that you have some sort of a message you deliver to them as well in your performance.
Yes, so it depends on what if I'm there obviously just doing my eco show, then it's very much the environmental message. I have done a few speeches as well where I focus on being yourself and not worrying about being different. So that was one thing I remember when I was a 10-year-old girl turning up to a magic club and realizing, oh, there's hardly any girls here. the real issue was feeling different, which at the age of 10 is scary. All you want to do as a child is fit in. You want to belong. And
even
as an adult, you want to fit in. But I learned quite early on that being different in magic is a good thing. Standing out is a positive. So harness it and be yourself. And I think that really helped me. So I try and give that message to girls as well. No matter what you're doing, it doesn't matter whether you're in the magic world or in a male dominated environment. Just be yourself. And that's the best thing you can be.
Was there a local club you belonged to before the Magic Circle? Because I know there are several other clubs around, and then you can also belong to the circle as well.
Yes, so the first club I ever belonged to was the Young Magicians Club, which is the youth initiative of the Magic Circle. I did join my local club, the Bexley Society of Magicians, in Bexley, not too far from me. I joined that when I was 14, which is the lower age limit as well.
I think I lectured for them back in 2005 or 2015. I don't remember when it was. Some years ago, I think I lectured in Bexley myself.
Potentially.
Yeah.
Once I was 18, I joined the Magic Circle as well.
And what was it like in each of those clubs? I mean, when you came in as a young lady, I assume your parents brought you and they probably kind of hung in the back and waited until the club meeting was over just to kind of see what was happening there. Did you feel, I'm assuming, the magicians welcomed you with open arms and were willing to show you some secrets, or they kind of said, you know, let's see what this girl's got, you know? What was it like?
Well, I've always felt welcome, and especially as I started with the Young Magicians Club, I already knew many of the members of Bexley before I ever joined that club.
Sure.
And so that's always helped. And my dad ended up joining Bexley Magic Club as well.
So he's a magician too.
He wasn't. But he helped out with the tech side of things and came along and supported me at so many shows. In the end, he joined as a member. And he enjoyed watching it and learning it. Not so much performing, although he did dabble a little bit. But it was quite nice to he became part of the Bexley family as well.
So the Young Magicians Club of the Magic Circle then is open to youth from what ages?
10 to 18.
Okay.
And anyone can join. You can join from America as well. Obviously, it's difficult to come along in person, but they've been doing Zoom shows, Zoom lectures and Zoom events over the pandemic. So hopefully that will continue and it can be anyone can join from wherever they like. You get a fantastic magazine. And it really did help me. It meant I learnt from professional magicians from a young age. And I think had I not had that, I might have given up with the kids' magic sets eventually. But it got to the point where I realized my family were bored of seeing the same tricks again and again.
Exactly.
I'd like to think I would have come back to it later in life, but who knows? My life would be, I wouldn't be present in the Magic Circle now if it wasn't for the Young Magicians Club. I know that for sure.
Well, when you were a member then also, you say the magazine, is it separate from the Magic Circular? Or are they?
Yes. Yes, so there's a Secrets magazine, it's for the Young Magicians Club, and they get tricks and reviews and articles that are interesting to the younger membership.
Who edits that? Or who's the editor of that magazine?
Oh, so we're actually looking for a new editor at the moment. So if there's anyone who is interested in editing the Secrets magazine, then please do get in touch.
Okay. Is it as large as the Magic Circular? Or is it scaled back and half the size? I mean, in comparison with a magic circuit or a magazine, what's it like?
It's a similar length, but they only come out every other month, so they don't get it quite as often. But it's similar. It's a nice glossy mag. It's a proper magazine.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Filled with lots of interesting things.
And how many do you have in the junior club now?
Oh, you know what? I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
I really should do, but I haven't caught up on all
Well,
those
when you
stats.
Were there, I mean, how
I
many typically?
Prepared.
Is it like about 20 or 200? I mean, what's reasonable? I mean, what's a
so scope? turning up to the actual lectures and the days, it would normally be about 80. Obviously, it varied depending on what
sure.
was on, but yeah, around 80 children each time. The membership, I think, it varies as well depending on what's on in the news. I know when Harry Potter was new out, the membership boomed, and when Dynamo came on the scene, the membership boomed again. So it's up and down, but it's several hundred.
Wow. Okay, so when you're 80 people, that's quite a few. So I could see why they would warrant having their own magazine and everything then as well. And they're from mainly in and around London area. Of course, now as you say, they can use that, I guess, on Zoom and be anywhere in the world. But prior to this, I assume they were mainly just in and around the London area.
So I think the membership's always been quite international. I remember even when I was there, there was someone who would come over from Ireland occasionally, and mm-hmm. he would come over as often as you could. Mainly London members, because they have access to the headquarters and be able to come along to the events. But you did get members from all over the country. Any children that were interested in magic, just getting the magazine was quite good. And it was quite good value, even if you're just getting the magazine, it's good value for money.
And do they have their own membership levels, much like in the Magic Circle, where you're going to be an AIMC and, you know, that kind of thing?
No, they don't do that. It's just members there.
Okay. And then once you become 18, it's not assumed that they're going to necessarily just migrate immediately over to the Magic Circle. They have to apply for membership and go through as you normally would for membership?
Yes, they do. It does make it a bit easier, and obviously sure. being part of the Young Magicians Club, you have access to, you get trained by magicians, you know, you can learn from professionals, you can see what you're meant to do, and it can make it, if especially if you're known to the people and you've been performing a lot, then it makes the process easier. I know I got to skip the interview stage because everyone knew me so well.
They
knew I did magic. So it does make it a lot easier, but you do still need to pass the exam and be of the right standard to get in.
And for those who are listening or watching this as well, when they want to actually join the Magic Circle, what's the best way of trying to apply for membership?
It's through the website. It's all the information's on there. It tells you about how to join. It tells you what they're looking for in the examination process. We also have an apprentice route, so you can join for a year before you take your exam. And that gives you access to our group of, we have an apprentice group, but they all help each other out and help with the exam prep. So if you think you're nearly there, you can go through that route. And just take a look on the website, apply, and we'll help you with the rest.
And as I understand it as well, when you talk about the exam, it's not necessarily going to be something asking about history. I mean, there are some people who are not performers, but who are collectors. And there are some people who specialize in close-up, but they don't know anything about stage or building props and things like that. Mm-hmm. So is the examination something that is skewed towards the specialty of whoever it is that is applying, or is it kind of a general thing?
Yeah, absolutely. You get, so if you're a performer, you can do whatever you like. I did my stage act. Most people do close-up, and recently it's all been over Zoom, which will be probably the easiest way to join if you're from the States. We've accepted videos, and there are different ways. So, mm-hmm. But the exam team will talk through what's allowed with you. If you're not a performer, you'd come through the thesis route. So it might be a written essay, or it could be a body of work, depending on what you do. But we have people who make props. We have people who've been radio broadcasters, historians, lots and lots of different people who have an interest in magic, who are really passionate and dedicated to it.
But not performers.
But not performers. But they're all important for the
sure.
art. They all help us
to
improve. Like us performers need our prop builders.
Right.
So everyone is welcome, and there's normally a route in. And I would say if you're looking to come in a different route from performing, then do have a chat with someone, because it's obviously it needs to be tweaked depending on what you're doing. But there's normally a way in.
Right. And as far as the different changes with the club, are Mondays of every month or every week meeting nights currently?
Yes, they are. So okay. At the moment, we are doing all our lectures online still, but we have opened up our headquarters again so members can come along and meet up for a drink and a chat and practice some magic and session, which is lovely. It's lovely to see people coming back into the building. And we're hoping to bring our events into the building, but we will make sure they're hybrid, so we'll have something for everyone, no matter where you live.
Which is another thing. I know this has been open forever to the general public, that is, who want to come in and reserve it. And I guess there are companies who do on a regular basis, will have, like, on a Wednesday night, and they'll have their employees come or and see a show, or exactly what is that about? How does that work?
Yes, so our building is available for hire. We do have some corporate hires, which helps to pay for the upkeep of the building, because obviously it costs a lot of money for that. And there are public shows as well. Obviously, the lockdown limited what we could do in the building, but we're slowly building them back up. So we have our close-up shows are back. Live Magic is back in the headquarters. Mm-hmm. And we do lots of different shows, and it's all members of the Magic Circle that perform in them. And they're always good fun. There's lots of different types. There's a history of mystery, and there's what we call At Home with the Magic Circle, where you get a stage show as well. And our Christmas show is always really popular. One of about 16 shows that everyone seems to love, which is great.
Isn't that a fundraiser? Considered a fundraiser at Christmas shows?
So it is to point. So the Magic Circle's headquarters is actually run by our associated but independent charity, the Magic Circle Foundation. And so the shows raise money for the foundation, that in turn they look after our building. So yes, it's a fundraiser, but it's to keep the building running and to allow them to fulfill their charitable aims. So they provide the building free of charge to do education days for schools, and they get to come in for free, and they also provide it sometimes for some charities. There's a fantastic charity called Breeze, who teach kids with hemiplegia magic tricks as a form of physiotherapy, and it literally changes their lives. They can zip up their shirts and brush their teeth and basic things that we all take for granted as a result of doing the magic. So sometimes they've done a couple of shows in our headquarters as well. So those are some of the charitable things they can do. Hopefully get to do even more of that now that we're opening back up.
Right. Now, another thing is, I understand, of course, it's near Houston Station, where people can get off and then walk on down. There's been some construction, as I understand, in and around the area, so it's difficult to find parking. Is that right? Tell me a little bit about what's been happening there.
Wow, parking. I didn't think we'd be discussing parking tonight. It's a very different question, so I've been getting recently. So the Magic Circle is near Euston Station, and we've got a major project going on in the UK at the moment called HS2, High Speed 2. It's a major new railway line that will be starting at Euston and going up to Birmingham. And I think they're hoping to expand it further as well in the future. But as a result, a lot of buildings in the Euston area have been knocked down, including the building right next door to the Magic Circle. So we used to be in a sort of a terrace, I guess you could call it. Now we're at the end, which means when it's all done and lovely, we will be right opposite Euston Station. We'll be really easy to find. It's going to be wonderful. But right now there's a lot of scaffolding. There's a lot of building work. There are a lot of roads closed. And yes, it can be a little bit tricky to find your way around. And parking is getting increasingly difficult. But if you can travel by public transport, that is definitely advised. But you can normally find parking if you really need to.
But the best thing really is to come into the station and walk up the block over there.
Yes.
To that. Yeah. Now, how long will it be before they complete all of that construction?
Oh, gosh, it's a long term project. I think we're looking at, well, probably 20 years to be completely finished. I don't know when the area will be neater. I think it will be in stages. I don't know the exact time frame.
And sometime about the end of your term, I guess, in office.
Well, no,
for next 20 years.
I think it will be long after then. Like, my term of office is a maximum 5 years, and I suspect HS2 will still be doing the work.
right. Which was another question I was going to ask a little bit earlier, and that kind of is a good point to ask, and that is, it is a five-year term, or rather a one-year term. Are you elected then every year? I mean, you're up for office. I mean, all of the officers and everybody's back up then again from year to year, but you can only repeat that five times. Or rather, four times after your first
year. Yes, so you're elected annually, but you, as president, you're allowed up to 5 years, which I think is enough anyway. I think you need fresh people coming in with fresh ideas.
New ideas, sure.
So it's good to have a bit of a turnover. But I hope that I can achieve lots in my 5 years. If I do 5 years, of course, I can't assume that I will be elected every year, but hopefully I'll do a good job and the members will want to keep me.
Well, let's hope so as well. I was going to say, as far as what your future plans are, I mean, with your age, I would imagine you were encouraging others of young people to get involved not only in Magic, but also with the club, because there's really not a finite number. In other words, you can have as many members as you want. And currently there are, what, 1,100 or 1,200 members worldwide, the Magic Circle?
It's a little bit more than that. I think it depends whether you count apprentices as members or not. So with members and apprentices is around 1,500.
Okay.
I think about 200 of that is apprentices. So there's no ceiling on that. We can definitely expand. Everyone's welcome to apply. Hopefully the membership will grow in the future as well. That would be lovely to see. I'd love to see more international members as well. I think that during the lockdown, we've all learned to think about members who aren't coming to the headquarters a little bit more. So it's something I'm particularly keen to work on.
So is it kind of a two-pronged thing in which you are hoping to bring not only more international members, but also younger members?
Definitely younger members. And the Magic Circle, the membership it's definitely got younger over the years. I've noticed a lot more young members coming through. I think we did quite a lot of work to encourage younger members to join as well. I'd love to see more children joining the Young Magicians Club. And as president of the Magic Circle, I also become president of the YMC. So that's a real opportunity for me to encourage more young children to come through there. And I'd love to see more women into Magic as well. Any good that I can do, as many people as I can get into Magic would be great. But I think if I can help the Magic Circle to be the best it can be, then hopefully that will encourage other people to love Magic as much as we do.
I'm sure all of the different interviews you've had, one of the main questions has been, what is the percentage of women in the Magic Circle? Isn't it like around 20% or so women? No?
No, I think it's about 5%.
Oh, my goodness.
It's really, it's low. But I think that's quite indicative of the Magic community as a whole. I think it is very male dominated. It is changing. It's definitely improving. And I know through the Young Magicians Club, I know more girls are coming through. So that there's regularly more girls there than ever were when I was a member.
Great.
So that's already changed. Uh-huh. It's getting there. And I think having more women performing on TV and as role models, and I've been doing some PR around the fact that I've become president, and most of that really is just to state, you know, female magicians exist, and anyone is welcome to do magic, and don't let it be male dominated, put anyone off.
Right.
Women can be, female magicians can be president in the Magic Circle. that's the message, isn't it? It's trying to encourage women and young girls especially to take it up.
It really is. And I'm glad to hear there are more young girls who are joining the Young Magicians Club, because it would seem to me in numbers that they would feel more comfortable, I guess, because as a young woman would be coming into a young magician or any situation where they're just a bunch of leering old guys, you know, looking at you, it's like, even though they're nice and saying, hey, let me show you something, it's kind of like, I'm getting too much attention here. You know, I'd rather kind of blend in. I assume that would be what you think.
Yes, it is scary, especially when you're only young. I was 10 years old when I first turned up to the YMC. I was quite short and I was shy, and I turned up, and to me, all the boys were about 6 foot higher than I was, and that was scary. And if the other girls hadn't turned up that day, especially there was one girl, I remember, Belinda, if she hadn't turned up, I don't know that I would have gone back. Mm-hmm. And not just me, then my mum and dad are thinking, what are we doing? We're leaving her in this room of boys. It's a situation that she's not used to being in.
Sure, sure.
So it's a weird thing to ask a girl to do. And it's only because I love magic so much that I stuck with it. I saw so many girls come along once or twice and never come back again. I can't describe how scary it is, how weird it feels. And yeah, you just stand out like a sore thumb. And that's that's not good when you're shy and nervous. And that does put people off. I know as performers, many of us, you know, we will have some level of confidence in order to go on stage and perform. But you should be able to feel like you fit into your community. And if there's no one like you, sometimes you don't feel that you fit there.
That's true. So it's not just with women. There are other people from other cultures who would be coming in who may not feel comfortable because they are not the right ethnic group or colored skin or whatever, and so they kind of feel like no one looks like me, and so they kind of slide out and they disappear.
I can imagine that's true, and it could even be, you know, no one does the same sort of magic as I do. It could be that it's just about you need to find people that are like you and role models, and people just feel like you fit in order to feel comfortable. That is so much harder when you have such an obvious difference.
I recall a fellow here in Texas, when he was young, just didn't seem to fit in, but he kept at it all the time, and he didn't let people change his weirdness, if you will. And he became quite successful, and his name is Bizarro. And I don't know if you know Bizarro over there, but he's popular here in the U.S. and lives out in Las Vegas, and he goes by the name Bizarro, and he has bizarre things. I remember seeing him do things when he was in high school, and he has developed, and it's, but, he could have been discouraged just because he was so different from everybody else, of saying, that's weird, that's bizarre. But he just embraced it and said, yeah, it is bizarre. I'm going to be Bizarro. Yeah. But not everybody's going to be that way. So I have heard from some women who, as little girls, saying when they were coming into meetings, they felt funny because it seemed like all the male magicians, and mostly, again, it's male-dominated, would be coming over there. They're encouraging and saying, can I help you? Let me show you. You know, what's your name? What kind of magic do you do? But it's kind of like they're almost getting too much attention. And they felt like, not that it was creepy, it was just that I feel uncomfortable because I'm now getting attention, particularly like you said, you were a shy young girl. And so if you have a lot of people all of a sudden giving you this attention, you're thinking, I don't know that I really want that kind of attention. So I have been told by some of my lady friends who started out as young girl magicians were saying, as a male magician, don't be so quick to run over and try and help somebody if you see a young girl who's new at the club. Would you say that'd be good advice? I mean, not to help as much, or yes or no? I'm kind of a quandary there.
Treat everyone the same. Don't run over to them just because they're a girl. Do what you would do with a new boy that's joining.
Good point.
Treat everyone equally. And don't, the thing that always bugged me, is at a magic lecture, I'm not a fan of card tricks. Every lecturer that would come along would say, oh, young girl, come up and help me with this card trick. And I find it really hard to react and pretend that I'm enjoying card tricks.
When it's not your thing.
I do. Yeah. Sometimes they are brilliant. I know card tricks can be great. They're really not my thing. And I think it slightly put me off being pulled up for so many. And sometimes the jokes could be a little bit uncomfortable, especially when, you know, I'm in a room full of men and my dad's in the room. It's a little bit awkward. There have been things like that, that women in general will get comments and things are mentioned that you'd rather people didn't say. I think that's on everyone to watch, no matter whether you're a magician or not. It can be awkward, but on the whole, I think I've been lucky and everyone's been really welcoming, but there have been a few awkward moments as well.
But in those awkward moments, did you feel as if, unless this changes, I'm going to quit?
I've never felt like that. I've never wanted to quit. I've always loved magic enough, but I can fully see why other people would. And I always had people that I knew would support me, and I've always felt welcomed, and I've been lucky that I found my place. But if I'd come in and, you know, what if the first thing I'd heard was one of those weird comments?
Yeah.
I doubt I would have been back. And I think that's the thing. What are we losing by, it's not just girls, but what are we losing by putting anyone off? And
anyone.
This is why equality and diversity and caring about these things is so important. And some people say, oh, I just want to focus on the magic. But like this is how you improve the art, is by welcoming more people in. Because the more, the different people you have with different minds, different abilities, different skill sets. That's how we improve magic, is by encouraging everyone and making sure it really is as accessible as it can be.
Wow, well said. Was that your campaign? That sounded like a campaign speech. That was so well said.
just life.
What you have lived, and you've lived such a short life so far and done and accomplished so much, and I am so happy and proud of you. Glad to we've had a chance really to chat about this. This has been phenomenal, you know, getting to, for everybody to get to know you a little bit better than from ballet on.
Thank you.
So the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. And, of course, if you're familiar with my podcast, you know that I always like to close by finding out what it is that your philosophy of my guest. What is your – I don't mean like abracadabra as a word. I mean, what is it that you live by when you wake up in the morning? What is it that encourages you to get up and do something today?
I just like to make a difference. I like to help you, and that's the same with the environment and with magic and the volunteering work that I do, and you know, the Girl Guides, everything. I just want to help and make a difference and leave the world in a better place.
I love that. Make a difference and leave the world in a better place. Couldn't have been better myself. Thank you very much, Megan. This has been just a wonderful hour. I appreciate you taking your time.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me.
You bet. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Megan Swan. This is Scotty out. Wow, that was great. Thank you again, Megan, for being my guest this week on the Magic Word Podcast. And I wish you the best for this new year. And I want to also wish that for all of the listeners as well. As we go into this new year and we make new resolutions, I can't think of a better one than the one that she left us with. So until next time, stay well, get booked, and remember to make a difference and leave the world in a better place. That's a great resolution. Happy 2022, everyone. This is Scotty out.